This is January the 27th, 1973, and I'm in the home of Benny McGee, interviewing Benny McGee. Benny, how old are you?
34.
Okay. What I'd like for you to do, since I've talked to mainly older people, I'd like you to just begin reminiscing and talk about what it was like to grow up as an Indian in Escambia County in the 1940s and 50s when you grew up. First of all, as you were growing up, were you aware of being Indian or that Indians were any different or treated any different than anybody else?
Well, in the early part of my life, I wasn't aware of being an Indian. I mean, from the first to the fifth grade, I guess I wasn't. In a way, I was. Well, I knew we had an Indian school that the Indians went to, that was the first to the sixth grade. I never was fully aware how the white people, Caucasian, whatever you want to call them, was against differentiation, against different race of people until I got in high school. I know when I first started in high school, and I guess it was in, it's been in 1950 or 51. No, I'll take that back. Well, I want to take it back. I went into the first time, well, I don't even remember what the year was in the 50s, I guess. But when I first went into high school, Escambia County High School in Atmore, how the people was, and I knew my dad, my uncle, several of them had to be stop buses to put us on the bus to go to high school. But I guess I was a little too young to really know what, you know, the full meaning of it. And after I got on up in the 9th and 10th grade, I guess it was. Well, then people started accepting us because we had Uncle Calvin, the chief of the Creek Nations at that time, had got a petition against the government about a lot of money was supposed to be paid off, and then the whole state, I guess, of Alabama came in at that time.
When you first went to high school, what was it like with the other students at the high school and your relationship with them?
First in high school, I don't know if you call it seventh grade high school or not.
Well, junior high school.
Junior. Right? It was poor relationship to start off with.
In what ways? What were some of the things?
I was a dark person, still am. And they couldn't accept. I mean, because I wasn't white, I guess. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a poor relation. Some of the teachers, most of the teachers were cordial and they were nice to me. But as the people, the students and things, I don't guess they had ever been around a really dark person that wasn't considered a Negro.
Mm-hmm.
They had a lot of maids. They had maids. They knew what Negroes were, and they were dark people. And I don't know what their own opinion of the Indian people was.
Mm-hmm. Before you came into Atmore to school, just playing and stuff, did you have much interaction with kids other than Indian kids
there playing? No, I did not.
You never had a white playmate before you came to school that you can think of?
No, I can't. I don't think I can remember of.
When you were real small,
I won't say a full blood Indian or a full blood white. I mean, they was mixed.
Yeah, but, yeah.
what they were considered Indian at that time.
When you were real small, how often did you get into the town of Atmore, would you say?
Now, what age is it? I mean,
well, before you started the seventh grade, say when you were out in the porch growing up out there, how often did you come to town?
Not too often. I won't say that. I really can't remember how often we came to town, to be honest with you.
Did you ever go to, did you go to movies much at all?
Yeah, used to come in on a Saturday and pay a dime and go and sit in there all day. Which you can't do now.
Other than doing that when, back when you were real small, what kind of things did kids out on the porch do for fun?
Well, me, I would say, myself and Houston McGee, Raymond McGee, Ray McGee, Hubert Rackett, we hunted a lot. We'd hunt from all the way in slingshot, bow and arrow, which we made. And on a weekend, that was the biggest thing. Killing birds, we chased, it used to be three or four birds we used to chase all the time. A thrasher, Joe Reed, and if we ever hit one of them, we chased them all day to kill it. And we stayed on the creeks up in Wet Weather Creek. We stayed there, I guess, every weekend.
Where is camp? That?
It's be north of Atmore, from Calvin's place on up there. We stayed up there every weekend on the Dan Creek fishing.
You mentioned Joe Reed. Is that a kind of bird? Or?
Yeah, that's a bird.
What's it called?
A Joe Reed.
Joe Reed? What does it look like?
White. I mean, it's a black, and it's a black bird. It's got a orange neck on it. Kind of looks like a robin, but it's not quite as big as a robin. It's got white tips on each wing.
Did y'all kill them just to be killing, or did you ever eat them?
We roasted them.
Did you?
Yes, sir. Built some fire and stuck sticks to them and roasted them quite a few times.
Did y'all do much fishing at that time?
Yes, sir, we did. Mm-hmm. We fished up on Wet Weather Creek, little catfish and a few fish eels. Raymond was real scared of fish eels. Catch one of them things, chasing them all night with us.
What, a fish eel?
Yeah.
Are they good to eat?
People say they are. I have never ate one. They say that's some of the best meat there is, but I never ate one of them. You catch a lot of them on the rivers now.
When you were growing up, which was not too many years ago, did kids, even at that time, have a lot of work to do out there?
On a farm, they did.
Yeah. Did you live on a farm?
I lived on a farm. I lived with a Chief Kevin McGee. We had a lot of work to do. Picking cotton. But I started off with you broke land, you planted your crop, you gathered your crop, cotton, corn. Wasn't too much soybeans going at the early part of my time. We did a lot of truck farming. At least we tried to do a lot of truck farming. That's growing vegetables, stuff like that. We did real well on it. But there's a lot of work on the farm. We'd milk our own, had cows. We done all the milking. We had 4 or 5 cows, I guess, we milked.
Did you ever go off and work for in cotton, picking cotton sales someplace else for other people besides your own relatives?
Yeah, quite a bit.
What was the pay like at that time?
I think when I first started picking cotton, as best I can remember, I think we was getting about $1.50 a hundred.
Hi, Tommy.
$1.25 a hundred. Danny.
$1.25 a hundred. That's $100. Now, did y'all go in a group in a truck or somewhere? Did you just go off and?
We went. We most of a man. he'd come around if he had a guy with I guess he would contract it or something, or they'd get hands to haul or pick his cotton, and it would be, I guess, 10 or 15 of us on a truck.
Were these crews ever mixed in the sense that there'd be black, white, Indian, all kind of people working together, or were they pretty much just Indians together?
Well, mostly, where we worked, it was mostly inland Indians. Well, the whole crew that I worked in would be, that he picked up would be Indian. Well, now, when we get to the field, there would be some colored people, some colored people working there, and some white people working too. But you never didn't know. I mean, they didn't. The man that contacted it would be strictly Indians that picked it up. All would be nothing but Indians that went with him.
How old were you the first time you started doing that kind of work?
I guess.
Wanted to do it.
12 years old.
So that would have been before you started going to school and that?
Yeah. Quite a few years. Mm.
What church did you grow up in, by the way?
Well, I never have really grown to a church.
He preached to what?
But, my mother belonged to a Holiness Church, and I was raised in a Holiness Church. I mean, I was the church, the Holiness Church was the only one that I had ever was affiliated with. And I still go to a Holiness Church. When I do go to church, I don't claim to have one religion. I go to a Baptist church, a Methodist church, or any church I take a notion of.
When you were a child, the point I'm getting around to, was the church an important part of your social life too?
Yes. Church was a great, was a big deal. Because we could get out, they had a lot of young folks, we call it young folks service. They give the young folks something to do at besides working. I mean, they give them in Christmas plays, or they used to have there's about a 10 or 12 churches, I guess, combined together from here to Molina and Bruton. Used to have young folks service, and when they put on the best show, you know, they had a prize, you know.
Yeah.
And it really was something to strive for. You really put out for it. Plays, singing, and...
But these were churches from all around here, Indian churches.
No, they wasn't all Indian churches. There was like I said, it was a Holiness Church. Yeah, they wasn't strictly Indian churches. But the churches out to Hartford, Port, most of the people that attended them was Indian people.
One thing I've wondered about is, back even say 20 years or so ago, in the church on things like that, it sounds like there was no hard feelings about Indians or white or anything. Everybody just went to church together. Is that true, or were there occasionally problems along those lines?
To best of my knowledge, I don't think we ever did have any problems at churches with the white people or in
well, was there anything besides the school that there were ever any that you can remember that there were ever any problems about along the
way? No, I can't. I don't mind. I know you could go to town and we was treated just as good. I mean, the only thing I can remember was in school it was some conflict to a certain extent in school, and I think that was about the only thing that that I can really remember that was that showed the difference between the races of people.
Yeah. What about with the courts or the law or anything like that? Was there ever any problem along those lines?
I don't know. I never did have to go to court. There wasn't.
One thing I haven't ever asked anybody.
Did y'all have a, when you were going to school out there, was there a truant officer that'd go around and get kids if they didn't come to school regularly, or was that left pretty much up to the individual parents or what?
My, giving you the best answer I know, I had heard of them, but I never did see one of them.
But the kids said there was yeah. one.
Yeah.
Well, getting back to school, could you talk about how you first got into athletics and that whole thing in high school?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
I think I love
it.
Well, it was, I first went to Atmore High School, or Escambia County High School. There was Houston McGee, which is now is a chief.
You could get that coat.
He had two brothers ahead of me and him, Curtis McGee and Frank McGee. And they was the ones that really had the roughest time going in high school. They the ones that my dad, my uncle and them, they put on, had to ride the bus a lot of time for them. But that after they got accepted in high school, they got in a little sports activity and playing football, baseball and stuff like that. Then I wasn't too far behind of them. And I guess they the one that really opened up the doors to go to school. And it was, best I remember was Curtis and Frank, and there was a girl named Dottie Cobbett. But a couple of Cobbett girls and boys, can't call their first names right now. But one of them is a registered nurse now. And they was the one really that had the roughest thing going to school. And I got in after they went in, and they never did finish school with Curtis them. They opened the doors for us to come in to go ahead. And I was in the, had an old teacher when I was in the descending school up here, Miss Grace Casey, and I was from them. Forget her, she was a terrific teacher. She was terrific. And I finished school, grammar school under her. Went in the seventh grade to Atmore. Had a coach down there by the name of Goldson at that time. And I didn't go out for any sports in the seventh, eighth grade, I don't think. When I finally went out for sports in the ninth grade. And she was one of the biggest things. She kept asking old Coach Goldson if I was, how was I doing. He was, as a matter of fact, he was my math teacher at that time, too. And she kept on asking him if I was playing the kind of sport. He was a head football coach. And so he kept asking me, and he come ask me one time, asked about going out for football. At that time, Houston had went out for football. And it was hard to go when you went out for football, because if you didn't have a way home, I'm going to tell you, and we live in, I guess, 10 miles out of town, then 8 to 10 miles out of town, and you practice football to out the dark, it's hard to get away home unless you hitchhike. And I walked it quite a few times after I started playing.
You walked all the way down, sir?
Yes, sir. And, but anyhow, make long story short, Houston first was went into sports. Then I followed him, I guess, for just to give him a companion to walk home, I guess. Because I never think I would have it. But we did. We went out for football. We made the team. He's out a couple of years, a year or two, and we had hitchhiked home after practice. And we sometimes the parents would be down to pick us up, and when they couldn't make it, we'd have to hitchhike home. And then later on, while I don't remember the club or what it was in that war, they formed a some kind of club that the boy that played football, they didn't have a way home, when you call them and they would come pick you up and they would take you home. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't, because most of the time you call, there's nobody home. You still had to hitchhike home.
Yeah.
Which we did. We got away and did that, but we did get quite a few rides home sometimes. And went on and they changed coaches. I played football in the 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grade. Houston was one of the best quarterbacks I guess they ever had. So he got hurt. He and I started to quit school. I guess after we got in, I don't know, we just got fed up with school. We still living on the farm and doing spring training there. We'd have to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, come practice football, and then go back and work on that farm, and then go back in the evening. It gets old.
Yeah.
But then I had a coach that named Holmes, A.R. Holmes. And him, Houston and I quit school. And rode weeks. Brought books home. All our books home. First time we ever brought that many books home. Fucking. And he was out there waiting on us when we got to the house. We got home, he was there waiting on us. Heard y'all boys quit school. Yeah, we quit. We got tired of it. I was in 11th grade at that time. Houston was in 10th. Yeah. He was another big man that helped me finish school. He talked, sit there and talked with us, and finally got us going back into school and playing sports. And one reason I went back, I love football.
Yeah.
I really did. That's one reason I went back to school, was just to play football. And I'm glad I did, and I got a fair education out of it. I won't say I got a good education, because I took the easiest thing within high school I could get by with, which I regret today. But I got a diploma myself in high school, and that means a lot.
When you were in sports and or football in high school, was there ever, even in a joking way, any mention made of the fact that y'all were Indian, or, you know, bragging about Indian ball players or anything like that?
Who's that boss? That little boss?
Well, not exactly. I think they enjoyed us playing football because not bragging or nothing. I was one of the biggest jokers on the football team you ever seen. I always kept something called. I always would joke and make jokes and things and I don't know what you call it, but the spirit of it, you know. I mean, you love football and practice every day, but if you ain't got something going for you, something to keep the other 11 people, 10 guys working with you, you ain't got nothing. I mean, you just go out there and practice. But I guess they kid me a lot. I was all the time running my mouth about something or other. I mean, carrying on, and old Holmes used to, he used to get on me. He accused me a lot of going down and cross line and getting drunk and something and then come out. But he never could prove it because he never did catch me. And he called, me and Houston, we went over to Crestview. We used to play Crestview, so Crestview played one on Thursday night, and Houston and myself and Frank and Curtis, we was going over and watch them play that Thursday night, because I think we played them in about 2 weeks from them. And we was stopped at a little beer joint over there, going on the wheel bay. Curtis and Frank was going to buy some beer, and on Holmes, he was going over and scout them at the same time. He happened to stop at the same beer joint. But he didn't catch us drinking nothing, so he'd always accused of us. But he never did kick us off the team, because he know we, in a way, we was life of the main team. We carried it. I'm not saying carried the team, but we put a lot of spirit into the team.
Realistically, do you think that your excellence and your success in football helped the cause of the Indians at all, or was that just incidental?
Well, it might. Personally, I think it. I think it gave a little recognition to the school, which we have had several great ball players that finished. But I did think it gave them a little bit more to the school board and to recognition from to accept the Indians in a more fashionable way. And what I mean about that is give them a better chance and providing ways for them to get home and stuff like that after they have went out to football. I think it has helped them quite a bit in it.
You know, given the fact that prior to your time, the people out there just didn't have any opportunity to get any education, was there ever any strain between the older generation and the younger ones that were coming up getting education, that they were getting too smart for their britches or anything like that?
No, I don't think it was. I think the older generation really appreciated. I know my daddy, he never did have any education about anything. My mother never did. But I think they really enjoyed. I think it really gave them a thrill to see the younger people.
When you were playing ahead. Sports, did you get a big turnout in the Indian community at the ball games? Or
we did. And I won't say this from the the own relatives, directly the close kin people from them. We didn't get, it wasn't that many from them, but there were a lot of the Indian people. Some of the younger people was fixed to go into high school and was coming up. We really did. We got a good turnout, really good turnout.
Did y'all ever, when you were in grade school, did they have any sports there that you learned to play football and stuff there?
We played a little football. In grade school, played a little softball in grade school. But it was nothing, compared to after you went into junior school or high school. I mean, this because this one supervised. It was just you go out there. We had learned a little bit about football, reading books and things and people telling, but it wasn't just a bunch of kids out there playing, throwing the ball and kicking the ball, and that's about hitting. And
y'all never had a coach or anything?
No.
PE teacher?
No,
sir. Another thing I'd like to ask you to reminisce about is, tell me about when you used to go to Washington and do research and all that.
That was right.
How'd you get started in that, and what was your job when you went up there?
Well, I take it back quite a bit. I was in high school at the time, and that's when I mentioned earlier about when Chief Calvin McGee got this grant against the government that's going to get a lot of money and get some money. That's when everybody became an Indian.
Yeah.
I don't exactly remember the first year we went up there. But I lived with Chief Calvin McGee at that time. I lived with him for, I guess, 18 years. And my biggest part after I got up was the drive. I drove quite a bit up there. But I got a whole lot of drive.
How many trips did you yourself go up there?
I don't even remember the number I have been up there.
But it was a lot of them.
It was quite a few of them. I would not say 15 times.
And the purpose of these trips was what now?
To work on, everybody said work on the Indian money, let's put it that way. Well, it was to get records to show that they were Indian and that they was entitled to this grant of the that Uncle Calvin had brought against the government. Because I might be overstepping or understepping or whatever you want to say. Really, nobody didn't, I don't know whether they knew they was really, they had always been taught that they was an Indian. Mm-hmm. And, but nobody really could tell you, where the ancestors came from or who really was the old, how they originally came about in it. Mm-hmm. And this was the biggest job was doing, was going to Washington at the archives up there on Pennsylvania Avenue. To try to trace back these records and see exactly how they tied back in becoming Indian, and who the leaders were, and who their forefathers and great grandfathers and so forth was.
But everybody knew they were Indian before they started all that, or they'd been told they were Indian.
They had been told. They had been told they had been Indians all their life.
I wonder how else people would have tried to explain the fact that, well, some of the older people are really dark, you know, but they have straight black hair and all of that.
Straight black hair, true enough.
And I wonder how they explained that other than they had to just say they were Indian. That was the only explanation that could be here.
Well, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I'm an Indian now. You see how dark I am. And I got a red-headed son. Now, how do you explain that?
Because you got some Caucasian ancestry someplace back there.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. People, they had been taught that all their life because they was in that mixture. But you, I've seen white people claim to be white people as darker than I am. Mm-hmm. But You gotta trace it back. You gotta go back and run your family tree back to exactly it does.
Amongst the Indians, now I've noticed, of course, that among the Indian people today, there are people who are just as white as can be and blue-eyed and blonde-haired. But there are other people, like say Uncle Isaac, who are really dark, dark person, obviously an Indian. Has there ever been any that you can recall any joking or teasing among the Indians themselves about those that are light and those that are dark?
Younger people, myself, I've heard a little bit of joking about some of them was really dark, black, and they call them black, and the other one, but as a whole, not much. Yeah. Not much.
What's the feeling about nowadays? Not so much relatives out there, but people who just sort of, well, in connection with this claim against the government, who didn't look Indian at all, who showed up claiming to be Indian. What was the feeling about that?
We had to sign.
You did?
We had to sign because it was open. I mean, it was public. It was a public opening and a signing, and you had to sign if he was what color he was. I mean, you had to sign him up. I mean, you didn't have to do the work. He was free. I think at that time the registering fee was a dollar. The rest of the whole family, whether he had one or whether he had 10.
Responsibility was on him to prove that it really was
anything. It was on them that signed up, unless asked John Calvin. He never did charge people too much to try to prove that they was Indian or whether they was not.
Would you ever recall whether there was any colored people that ever showed up trying to sign up for Indian money?
Not at the time that I was living with Uncle Calvin. I don't think there was. I can't remember if there was or not. Mm-hmm. I don't believe there were. Mm-hmm. But I have heard in the last 3 or 4 years, about the last 2 years there, I went to Illinois, and I had heard that there was several colored people that come out and try to sign up for them. Now, I just hate here, so I don't know. I won't say it for a fact, but I had heard of it.
I wonder if that was true, whether some of them got a check or not.
I think Calvin had. He was a great man. I think he had a. He was a man had a knowledge. I mean he. He wasn't very educated, to a certain. I mean, and book in school, saying finishing grades 1, 2, 12th grade, but he had a great knowledge about human being. He could nearly tell. I mean, he was a. He could tell whether a man. He says I came from so and so because he had done quite a bit of research work. He said, and he knew. He knew people. He knew people.
Talk about him a little bit and what you think he was trying, what he was up to and all that, what he was trying to do.
He, like I said, I live with him, well, he's a father to me, because I live with, well, actually I live with him more than I did my own father. He wasn't trying to get personal recognition for himself. He was trying to get recognition for the Indian people as a whole, as their own individual, I mean, as a race of people.
Mm. Why was he trying to do that, you think?
Well, I don't know. Like you say, though, you know, the communists, you got a Negro community and a white community and an Indian community. And he had been taught all his life he was an Indian, ever since he'd been knee-high to a duck, I guess. And he had seen the discriminations, I guess, the way that the Indian people had been kind of pushed back during his time and coming up in his childhood, too. How they got along with people, and he was, like I said, he didn't have much in schooling, but he read. He could read. He read a lot about Indian people because he was one. He'd been taught that he was all his life, and he was. I guess after he got up, he had a nice for him. He had been kind of handed down from to a certain extent, I guess. I guess it was 13 of them, I believe, was in the brothers and sisters. And he was a leader. He was a leader among himself, his brothers and sisters. And he knew more how to go about doing things. And that's reason that people accepted him as a chief. Because he could talk to people. He didn't have to raise his voice. I mean, he was a small man, he couldn't raise his voice. I mean, he'd get mad sometimes, but he was small. He could talk.
Yeah.
And when this Klan got started, I think he did, like I said, I don't think he did it for personal reason, which I know he didn't. He just, like I said before, he just wanted to get the recognition of the Creek Indians, which had kind of been ignored for the 20 or 30 years, in a way, through this part of the country. He just wanted to get the Creek Nation back as a nation and as a race of people. To stand together and accomplish something.
Do you think he ever had any ideas of someday, eventually in the future, seeing complete integration of the Indians with the white people? Or
yes.
Is that what he was after?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. To my opinion, I believe he did.
Yeah, he did things like putting on war bonnets and all of that, which sort of makes them stand apart from other people.
Yeah, but you look at it like it makes people respect you, too. Mm-hmm. It gives you, a little authority, I guess. I mean, it does make people respect you, and that you're going back to your culture and know that you're an Indian. Uh-huh. It's like you're nice. If you know what I am, and me and you can get along pretty good together. But if I'm a big pretender, uh-huh. And I tell you something today and do opposite to tomorrow, you know what I am. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't a man like that. And when he put his dressing on and he told you something, he'd do it.
Mm-hmm. So it was wanting to have equal opportunity and all for
equal
Indian.
Equal opportunity.
To, but at the same time to recognize
as your, as an Indian person, as a Greek nation.
Do you think he was trying to get some of the Indian people to know who they were, that they hadn't?
For recognition, I think he was.
Yeah.
Recognition.
Well, you're now on the council yourself. What do you see as being the future, work, particularly now that the money has come from the land claim? What lies in the future for Indian work in South Alabama?
Well, there's not but one thing to do, is to move further ahead.
What direction do you think that will
Think we can, I think if, like you said, I'm on the council, which is non-profit organization, but if we can get more people in school. I think what we're striving to do is keep the people in school, Indian people in school, trying to get them more scholarship, try to work together and give them a better education. Get more in trade school and stuff like that. And just to be an Indian, American. Just to be an American. And I think if we can accomplish this, we have done quite a bit. Just to keep people moving ahead and going along with society and moving ahead. And I think that would be one of the biggest. I think that is one of his dreams. Not to live the old program. I like to go back and reminisce the old times. But you can't live the old times. I mean, you can't live today like the Indians lived 100 years ago. You gotta move as progress moves. And if you don't move, you're gonna get run over. And I think he saw that. I think that is one of he knew if he could accomplish to get one thing started, and which he was a great politician in a way. He never did run for nothing, but politicians have come and asked him to carry the Indian vote, which he has.
Yeah.
You probably could ask a jillion of people.
Yeah.
But I think he saw that, to get the Indian people to move ahead and establish themselves as an Indian, as a race of people, as an American, and move as America moves.
Yeah.
And I think that's what his dream was, just not be a laborer or just some dumb Indian like he always said, but move and get an education and move with as the world moves.
You say like some dumb Indian, is that an expression you've heard in your
life? Yeah, I have had heard that.
Yeah.
Maybe it's in songs and a lot of things, but I have heard the expression dumb Indians.
Yeah. I remember one time I asked you if when you were in the service you'd ever been called chief, and you said, yeah, that and a lot worse. What are some of the worst things you have in mind?
Yeah, I have been called quite a few names. And
because you're
but
a man,
I don't think that. I think a lot of people, a lot of it was just in joking ways. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was intentionally just because I was a man, then I don't think it was meant that way.
Do you think that there are many Indians who go around like with a chip on their shoulder because they're Indian? Was that a characteristic of Indian people around here or not?
Not to my knowledge, it wasn't. Mm-hmm. Not to my knowledge, it was not. I know I don't, mm-hmm. but as an end of myself, I don't. I got my own ways. I don't think having a chip on your shoulder, that's like saying you're mad against the whole world. You're not gonna accomplish anything like that there. One person ain't gonna be, he can't do anything. He ain't gonna accomplish anything. I mean, you might have a grudge against another person, and then you
as a person,
yeah. yourself. I mean, as another individual. I mean, that's just as a fight. I mean, but first, can a chip on your shoulder against what the white people did till the end? I mean, you really can't. You really can't. I can't. Mm-hmm. I can't hold it against them. I mean. Maybe that was their way of surviving, and maybe that was our way of losing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, laws, you can, I read about quite a bit, and I won't say quite a bit, but I heard people speak about it. They say, well, you have so many different denominations of churches. Okay, you have so many different denominations of Indians, races of Indians, of white people, Mexican, Negro. Yeah. I mean, you're not gonna, because this, they say go to this church and you go and that's one gonna take you up to the see the great white spirit. I mean, that's the same way, you know what I mean? You just can't go about it and fight the whole world because you don't be one way.
Mm-hmm. So you feel like that despite what you read in the paper about Indians in other parts of the country, that Indians around here have not been very prone to have a chip on their shoulder about things that
No, I don't. I don't. I speaking strictly for myself.
Yeah.
And I really don't. I don't know if you're referring to some of the things that heard the Indians been doing.
Yeah.
Well, I don't condemn them either. I mean,
like the ones that occupied the BIA building.
Yeah. I don't condone them for it and condemn them for it. Maybe they had a legitimate reason to do it. I have a. Well, they've been out, I don't know exactly which tribe it was, which one it was, but they had been sent out, a lot of them been sent out on, I've never been on a reservation.
Yeah.
And I don't know what living on a reservation would be.
You never visited any in the Wisconsin area?
Yeah, I have visited them and talked with them, but I mean, not a person high their life is on it. I mean, they could come off the reservation, go get drunk and, do anything they wanted, but I mean, I never been on a where they had to stay, right on that reservation and not come off. Maybe these Indians up there did have a legitimate reason to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but I never talked with any of them. But I don't condone them and I don't go along with them. I think it's a better way of doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And demonstration, I don't. Believe in demonstration myself. I don't see where it accomplishes anything myself.
In your travels around the country and so forth, have you met Indians from other parts of the country at all?
Yeah. I won't say it from other countries.
I mean, from other parts of this country.
I met some Indians in Oklahoma. I was stationed in Fort Sills, Oklahoma for 6 months. And I went to Wisconsin. I met some of the Indians on the Menominee tribe up in Antigo, Wisconsin.
did you feel like you had anything in common with them because you were both Indian or not?
Well, we were dark.
That's right.
<yeah. laughs> Well, I don't know what you mean. In common, you could, well, I went on the reservation in Menominee Indian up in Nanigo, Wisconsin, and I met some of the guys on there, drinking quite a few beers, but just being with them, I guess, I mean, it makes you feel good, just to know you're an Indian. To me, it is, and you get with another Indian, I don't know, it's like, I guess, two white buddies get together, you can just have a good time. And I can have a good time.
Did they accept you as an Indian?
Yeah.
Didn't bother them that you had a southern accent or anything like that?
Well, they don't speak Yankee neither too much.
Oh, turn to another subject for just a minute. It seems to me that sometime you or somebody else made a few statements about the Indians around here as if they're a little bit different in their ways of thinking about things and doing things. One of the things I've heard some people say is that there seems to be a little jealousy amongst Indians and not wanting each other to get ahead. Is that true or?
Yeah, I have to agree wholeheartedly with that. And I think this comes from the in a marriage with the white people. I really do. We have in this Atmore area, Skamania County area, it's three communities. Have Hedepadita, Porch, and Hartford. And we have had in my 34 years age, there has been quite a few white missionaries, preachers and things that's been through these three communities. Used to be the Holiness Church was the only church out there. Well, besides, I take that back, besides the Episcopalian and the Judson Church up there. I don't remember exactly what the number
Baptist.
Is that a Baptist?
Yeah.
Up in Hedepadita at that time. And I think out of these three communities, it used to be when I was a kid, these three communities worked together. I mean, they did. You could have a hog killing and one day here, and this community, these people come over and help you and have a hog killing somewhere else, and you'd have dinners church at houses and churches and at the church and come. But now, I think the church, I'm not knocking a church and nothing, but I think the churches has played a big role in making, might sound like an atheist or something, but I think the churches have made a big role in for the last 5 or 10 years, in the Indian people through this community. I think because there's so many different preachers that have been coming in and telling one thing, and someone believes in it, someone don't believe in it, and you got two or three more different denominations. You got we didn't have any Mennonites, and then now there's got a couple of Baptists, and you got three or four different the variation of the Holiness Church and the Episcopal Church. I think it has played a big part in knocking the people, persuading the people. And being against each other. But then you have to go back to common sense too. Common sense plays a big part in anything. I don't care what you go into. But, and then common sense will lead you astray. I mean, if you will believe in this thing, in this particular thing, well, you believe in it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that we have had a lot of conflict in, just because of it. I know right there in Porch and Hog Fork, there's sisters and brothers next door. One of them's a pastor, and one of them goes to one church, and one goes to another church, I mean. Yeah. But they're still holding his church.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? I mean, I think that, I mean, it's because, it's, I don't know if it's maybe what God wanted it to be. I don't know.
Well, you know, with all that going on, I wonder, what do you think, how is it going to be possible with that going on to realize the dream of Calvin McGee that you said of having the Indians stand together as a race, if that's going on?
Well, that is a good question. I believe he left enough when he died. It might take maybe a year, maybe take 5 years for it to soak into some of the heads of the older people or the younger people how exactly what he wanted. And I believe in time they will realize the dream that he had. I do believe it. I like I said, some of them might die, which a lot of them is going to die. But I think in the next, and with the council that we got, and still pulling together, and then start telling them to try to carry on, I think in time they will accept it. Maybe, I'm not going to say as a church, you know, in churches, the poor, I mean, change from this church to that church, mm-hmm. but as a person,
mm-hmm.
I think in the next 4 or 5 years that they will start accepting and work together, mm-hmm. which I do believe.
Well, one time we were just talking and you said something about an Indian movement. Is this what you had?
Yeah.
That's what
I had in mind. And I think after a few more, thing like we had at Thanksgiving and 4th of July, we got some more of the church going people that start coming in. And I think they are starting to realize that we are trying, and it's, if we can get 4 or 5, maybe 3 or 4 scholarships or something after we get together and for the kids to get in school, I think they'll start realizing what we're trying to do.
This past Thanksgiving, were there more of the people that before hadn't gone to those
things? Yeah, I do. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Sure do.
I understand that some of the people feel like it's wrong to wear feathers and do dances and all that kind of thing.
Well, most of the Holiness Church do believe it's a sin. I don't know that they believe that's what they've been taught, I guess. And like I said, there's a lot of half-assed preachers, good preachers, and stuff like that that's been through and taught. And they don't believe in dancing. They don't believe in a lot of stuff.
Do you think that the Indian costume and dancing, is that really an important thing in the Indian movement? Do you think that's necessary to do that at this time?
To a certain extent. And what I mean about that, it gives us a recognition. It gives the younger people and some of the old people that I guess maybe say has forgotten it, that how the Indians looked, how they dressed back at that time, and how they had to go back providing living for their own self, and some of the dances. If a lot of dancing, you got to understand what I mean. You got to know what it is to get the understanding about it,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of things. And I think it's a way of showing some of the people exactly how the Indians had to survive in the world. And I think it's an omen to show them if they survive at that time and can keep it up, they can have a chance of moving right along. And like I said, as the world turns, you got to turn with it and move right along. But that is the dancing and something other. It's just for festivities in a way, but it gives a reminiscence of how they used to do it, how they had to survive and what they had to do and how they dressed and things like this.
But things like Thanksgiving also let people know that Indians are not just in history.
They're still alive.
They're still alive.
Right. Yeah.
Let me ask you one more thing, Benny. How do you feel about in the modern year, well, not modern year, but they're just recent years, it seems like more and more Indians have married outside of the Indian race. How do you feel about that? You yourself now married Indian.
Well, you have to ask yourself a couple. Why do you marry? If you love somebody, you marry.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a white person,
you're saying you think it might be just a natural thing that has gotten together more.
Yeah. After for the last 20 years or 30 years, there's been a lot of intimate, intermingling and marriage and stuff. You know what I mean? Because ever since since Uncle Kevin has been in a marriage, you know.
Yeah.
And
back 200 years ago, there was some intermarriage. Yeah.
And it's a. Today, the Indian people is moving up. I mean, in a way, they just right in with the rest of the society people. I mean, they right with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's marriage. It's just like boy meets girl in high school.
Yeah, yeah.
White or black? I could knock Indian boy be married a colored girl. I mean that is love is love. I mean that's what you say you marry somebody for. I mean I don't knock it. I might not stand for it. I might approve it.
Yeah.
But that's life.
Yeah.
And it takes every walk of life of people to make the world turn.
Do you think that if this continues, and this is just kind of an academic question, I want to get your opinion. Do you think there will come a time, maybe not in our lifetime, when there won't be any more separate races of people, they'll all be the same?
You know, I've thought of that a million times. And I thought about the denomination church, if it ever be a time where it just be one church.
Mm-hmm.
And I think according to the Bible, it's going to be one church. And I think according to history, it's going to be, I won't say race of people, they can be one class of people, let's put it that way. I won't say race, they're going to be one class of people.
One class in what sense do you mean?
I mean, it might be colored, white, but they're going to be all considered one class of person, people.
Uh-huh.
I don't think that the race or anything will have anything to do with it.
Nobody pay attention to it.
To my best knowledge, I think that's the way it is.